Are you also tired of one-size-fits-all weight loss plans? Meet Noom, the personalized solution that meets you where you are. Noom is able to understand your unique needs, from dietary restrictions to medical concerns. Unlike restrictive programs, Noom embraces your lifestyle and choices. Discover a sustainable approach to weight loss, tailored just for you. Honestly, Noom felt like it was made for me. It's not just about what I eat. It's about understanding why. With Noom, I've learned so much about myself and built healthier habits that stick. It's all about progress, not perfection. Say goodbye to restrictive diets and experience the Noom app for yourself with personalized lessons and expert coaching. Noom's psychology and biology-based approach has helped over 5.2 million people achieve their goals. Stay focused on what's important to you with Noom's psychology and biology-based approach. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com. And check out Noom's first ever cookbook, The Noom Kitchen, for 100 healthy and delicious recipes to promote better living. Available to buy now wherever books are sold.
You've tuned in to Columbia Calling, your first stop for everything you want to know about Columbia. How and where to invest, where to visit. From the Pacific to the Caribbean, the Andes Mountains to the Amazon jungle, Columbia has a slice of everything. Shooting from the hip, answering the questions that need answering. Here's your host, the journalist and hotelier Richard McCall, shedding some light on the fashionable South American destination of Colombia.
It's that time of the week again, folks. It's me, your host, Richard McCall, here in Bogota, Colombia, 2,600 meters closer to the stars. And yes, what a weekend we've lived through. It's now Tuesday, but this last weekend was the second round or the runoff vote in the Colombian presidential elections. And if you didn't know this was going on and you're interested in this part of the world, you've either been very much asleep or dead. So, yes, Iván Duque is the president-elect of Colombia. But let's go a little bit deeper into some of the stories behind this election, behind what's going on, because it has been quite a phenomenal election. And I, for one, am glad it's over. It seemed to take forever and polarize the whole of the country. Now, can we just get on? Can we just get along? I don't know. But so 2018 to 2022, we'll have Iván Duque of the Centro Democrático, that's the Democratic Center, which is an Uribista party. That's the Uribista, of course, being the parties that follow the line of former president Álvaro Uribe Vélez. And yes, of course, he was pivotal in this election. So yes, Iván Duque will be leading, as is the usual norm here during elections. He'll be leading the country until the next World Cup, so from Russia to Qatar. But what are the figures around this? I mean, there was a little bit of a worry that people wouldn't go out and vote today. On Sunday. They wouldn't go out and vote on Sunday because of the three matches in the World Cup. And yeah, Mexico defeating Germany, Brazil and Switzerland drawing, and Serbia beating Costa Rica. So there you have it, you know, three games that could have taken away from the voting public. That's, as it was, there was 47% abstention rate. Duque got 10.3 million votes to 8 million votes for his rival Gustavo Petro. And of course, this is kind of unprecedented. These are the stories that come out. There are two stories really here. The unprecedented amount of votes that went to, you know, an openly left-wing, socialist sympathizer, openly left-wing candidate Gustavo Petro, a former M19 guerrilla, former mayor of Bogota, very outspoken opposition senator. And one thinks that he's in the perfect position, if he plays his cards right the next 4 years, to run for the presidency and win it within 4 years. Why do we think that 8 million votes for the left wing is kind of unprecedented? Well, it seems like finally voters in Colombia are breaking with the longtime association of left-wing and the FARC. So the stigma here in this country, if you are left-wing, you are immediately tied with the label of being a member of the FARC or a sympathizer of the Revolutionary Armed Forces of Colombia, the guerrilla group who signed a peace agreement under the government of President Juan Manuel Santos in 2016. So this seems to be one of the big issues here. So very, very big deal that. Now, talk a bit more about that later. But Petro, so, you know, you see where he won his votes. He won Bogota. He won the Department of Atlántico, where Barranquilla is located. He won Sucre. And then you look at what else he won. He won Nariño, Putumayo, Valle, Cauca, Valpez, and Choco. All coca-growing regions, all been flayed by the violence, and all regions of former strength of the FARC. You can read into that what you like, but those were his departments won. And Iván Duque won the rest. Who is Iván Duque? Well, let's give you a little bit of a background. But before we get into that, let's understand the issues that surround the most important, or not important, influential person in Colombian politics, the last part of the 20th century, first part of the 21st century, is no one more, no one less than Álvaro Uribe Vélez, the former president. Of course, he was a governor of Antioquia, and then he became president between 2002 and 2006. He campaigned to change the terms and presidency so you could run twice consecutively. So then he got in 2006 and was in until 2010. He put in his protege at that point, who was Juan Manuel Santos, his former Minister of Defense, Juan Manuel Santos, who's the current president, will be stepping down August 6th. And Santos obviously turned his back on Uribe, and they've never seen eye to eye since. Uribe then got his next protege, who was Oscar Iván Zuluaga, almost into the presidency for 2014 to 2018. And in 2018, he got his new protege, Iván Duque, into the presidency, into the president's seat in the Palacio de Nariño. So talking about a seriously influential politician, you know, what Uribe says has a major sway all over the country. So you have to think about that. You have to put that into all sorts of context when you're talking about Colombian politics and recent Colombian politics. Who is Iván Duque? Well, he worked, I mean, I guess his father was a liberal, but he worked for the International Development Bank for several years in Washington, D.C. He's been up there in D.C., as people will call him, the D.C. Colombian, for quite some time. He studied at Georgetown for a bit and at the American University. And, you know, he speaks well. There's a coherent, market-friendly discourse. And of course, he's talking about uniting Colombia, and he has to, with 8 million people voting in his contra, he has to unite Colombia. It's not going to be all plain sailing. It's very healthy to the Colombian political situation that there's 10 million votes to 8 million votes. It means it's not going to be, you know, a smoothly paved ride for the Uribista candidate. Therefore, they have to find mutually beneficial things to work on. It seems almost impossible that I'm saying that Colombia is getting its first ever female vice president. You should think that, you know, in this day and age, that we should be further ahead than this. But Colombia is getting the first ever female vice president, Marta Lucia Ramirez, who was a presidential hopeful. She's been the Minister of Defense. She's done a whole lot of things. Had Petro won as well, I mean, there would have been a female vice president, Angela Maria Robledo. But Marta Lucia Ramirez is in the seat. And yes, so what does Iván Duque, what's he going for? Well, he's told people in the past that he will tear the peace accord to shreds, but he's since softened his tone on that. And I'm going to go into that more because that's more my thing. But he opposes adoption by gay couples, he opposes gay marriage, he opposes euthanasia, and he opposes the legalization of drugs. So he'll be right in line to remain as the U.S.'s number one ally in the region, because that will toe the line with certainly with the Trump administration, pretty much any administration, but with especially with the Trump administration. But let's talk a little bit about the issues of what's going to happen to the peace. Let's say the peace, the peace agreement now. With Duque and his party now in power, we can't say that Colombia will be going back to war with the FARC. Duque, he'll likely amend or restructure, as he chooses to say, he restructure this peace accord, seeking certain modifications, and he will fail to act on other things. He'll not break it in a way that causes thousands of demobilized FARC guerrillas to take up their arms again, but he won't move with a certain alacrity to carry out parts of the accord, and, you know, he'll starve it. I think that's the way we should say it. So he's promised to make changes to the accord's transitional justice mechanism. Now, this has been lauded around the world. Of course, the peace accord has been internationally celebrated, but it's not widely loved here in-house in Colombia. This transitional justice mechanism is in its infancy, and the idea is that it holds people accountable on both sides, the guerrilla and the government, so the military and whomever, and these people who committed war crimes and crimes against humanity. But it took the government and the guerrillas 19 months during the peace dialogues in Havana to negotiate this. This was the thorniest issue that they were negotiating between 2012 and 2016. And it's called the Special Jurisdiction for Peace. Now, those who are no referendum, you know, remember that the peace agreement was voted against. It was voted, and much like the Brexit exit. This is very, very unpopular, this Jurisdicción Especial de Paz. And the idea is that it offers weak punishments to murderers and kidnappers in exchange for confessions and reparations to victims. And so Duque has called it, and I quote, a monument to impunity. So Iván Duque, he wants to strengthen the penalties handed out to ex-guerrillas to make them look more like prison, or at least like life in an agricultural penal colony. How are they going to change this? I don't know, but we wait and we see. I think it's unlikely that he'll be able to do this because the Colombia's courts have already approved the structure that's agreed in the accords. And with Colombia now very much on the international page and international headlines, being an OECD nation and in NATO or a collaborating partner of NATO, we're very much under the glare of the international community. So things cannot be turned back. But should he succeed in altering this structure, there'll be a backlash because the demobilized guerrillas, or 7,000 or 7,000 plus, they'll surely reject any punishment that resembles, that they lost on the battlefield. And the FARC were not defeated. I mean, that's, I think you have to understand, they were not defeated. They came to the table and they negotiated as equals. Now, 7,100 ex-guerrillas have registered in this Jurisdicción Especial de Paz. But I don't think if there was the option of jail time, I don't think many of those would actually come forward. I think they'd just go back into the jungles. They wouldn't go back into the jungles and take up arms, I don't think, but I think they'd just go back into the jungles and get on with their lives away from state presence. Who wants to, who wants to face penalties? So Duque has also proposed a constitutional amendment to ban amnesties for narco trafficking. The issue with this, of course, is that the peace accord considers this as on a case-by-case basis. The FARC want narco trafficking considered as a political crime, so therefore that it's not judged under the same rules. It'll be tough for him to do this. If he does away with this amnesty, if he gets away with it not being no longer being a political crime, any constitutional change would apply to future peace processes, and so the FARC would be okay possibly, but the ELN, who are currently engaged in, so that's a National Liberation Army, are currently engaged in peace dialogues in Havana, Cuba. Remember, they've been moved from Ecuador after the deaths of the two journalists and their driver in southern Colombia at the hands of the dissident FARC, but equally so, Lenin Moreno, the president of Ecuador, said that they could no longer host a peace talk of this nature. But what of that? Who knows? Duque also strongly opposes the accords that allow ex-FARC members to hold political office. Now, this is one of the key issues on the peace negotiations. One of them was political participation. So they had, the FARC were granted 5 automatic seats in the Congress and 5 automatic seats in the Senate. But Duque is opposing this, saying that they haven't paid any penalties for their war crimes. But this part of the accord does raise the absurd likelihood of former guerrilla leaders starting and ending their days in restricted liberty, but serving in Congress or perhaps mayor's offices in between. Altering it might cause some of the FARC's most prominent leaders to abandon the process. Certainly, I could imagine Ivan Marquez, he's pretty much abandoned anyway. He's gone back to Caquetá for his own security. And they'd take their followers with them. So the number of dissidents this would create would be lower than those created by an attempt to toss ex-FARC members into regular prison. But it makes a very difficult situation. It's going to be tough for him on this front. We have to think about this. So if we say instead of striking dramatic blows against the accord, it's more likely that Duque and his coalition will kill it through neglect. They'll starve it. They'll cast the accord adrift and fail to take action and fail to spend money. It will have the same end result as dramatically tearing it to shreds, but they can deny that they are tearing it to shreds. This peace accord envisions a 15-year implementation period. Of course, all Colombians would like it, completed and done tomorrow, and that's part of the problem in the country, in the political situation. Everything is wanted to be so fast. But Colombia's Constitutional Court has made it clear that it is the law of the land. The country's next 3 presidents must implement it. But as we know, Iván Duque can slow walk this accord to death, and under an Uribista guidance, it's very probable this will happen. Now, one of the key issues that has been a problem for Colombia since the beginning of time has been land ownership, and there's been no agrarian reform in Colombia. It's the only Latin American country which hasn't had one. So the accord's chapter on rural reform and development, it promises to benefit smallholding farmers range from a national mapping of land holdings to building roads and irrigation and credit and healthcare and food security. They don't want to do this. Duque's coalition, Uribe and his friends and all of the others are large landholders, and think of FEDEGAN, the Federación de Ganaderos, and they benefit from the current rural status quo. They don't want land to be mapped. They don't want the paperwork to be done. They do not want credit to be doled out. What can you say? This is not going to be acted upon. Anything about agricultural reform. Petro, who was set to, follow the peace accord to a T, had said that he would invest most of his time into the countryside and agrarian reform. So, of course, this mobilized these big landholders against him. It's very unlikely that the Duque government devotes billions of dollars to the countryside just because the accord says it should do so. It won't happen. So what are we looking at? Are we going to see further increased state presence in the counties around Colombia? I doubt it very much. These are long abandoned zones, and there's only a very small amount of investment going into there. So it's, where do we go from here? Well, I guess the next thing to say is what about illicit drugs? What about coca, which is has been booming in the last couple of years, and the cartels or the newly emerged criminal gangs or armed groups, they have so much coca paste now that they don't know what to do with it. And I have that on certain authority from someone in the British government. But what can you do? I mean, these get tough policies tend to target the small holding peasants who can't get their regular crops out to road to sell them. And of course, the only people that get in there are in go-betweens between the cartels or the armed groups. And of course, these are just it's not lucrative, but it's economically viable and economically beneficial for these people. So following the accord's principle of attacking the root causes for coca coca cultivation. I mean, President Santos has sought to sign agreements with more than 100,000 of these families around the country, promising 2 years of assistance. But it's already struggling, and it's unlikely that Duque will continue it. He'll go back to forced eradication and probably fumigation. Will we start seeing drones in Colombia? Maybe. It's very possible. So very difficult, this situation. Very, I don't know what to say. You know, I have to be open. I would have been much more in favor of a De La Calle presidency or a Fajardo presidency, but neither Duque nor Petro, really. Iván Duque has presented himself as the business-friendly option to make Colombia a modern, prosperous country. But he'll need to replace this certain feudalism, which is based around the country and in the city. So it's going to be a very difficult time, very interesting time. If the clock is turned back on the peace accords, there are results that Colombia would definitely feel for more than a generation. There are challenges here. But let's try and see the positive side. Again, it's not going to be plain sailing, but at the same time, there's a healthy opposition. There's a healthy, you know, there are moments, and there's a monument to democracy. The voting was good. This has been the most peaceful elections in Colombia's history. We're now getting the youngest president in Colombia's history. Let's hope he's not too much of a protege, as they say, or as others would say, a puppet. Let's hope that he can govern alone. Let's hope that he can take the initiative and not just be, a spokesperson for Uribismo. Well, that's me for this week, talking about the elections and going a little bit further into the situation here in Colombia, just a little bit deeper into it. I hope you've enjoyed this show. We'll be back next week, and we've got further interesting people to interview. But that's to give you a little bit more of a deeper insight into the results of this presidential election here in Colombia. Thank you for listening. I've been Richard McCall. This has been Colombia Calling, episode 233. Get in touch at Colombia Calling on Twitter and Facebook and so on. Bye-bye.